Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands, jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today I am once again joined by Rubicon's Chief Strategy Officer, Michael Allegretti, and we're going to talk about a concept that is really permeating our corporate culture, our business ideologies, our cities, and our new normal, and that concept is resiliency. So Michael, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Amy. It's great to talk with you, as always.
The word resiliency has been thrown around a lot in the past few months. I mean, I've heard it on every news outlet. You know, it's certainly very important to our corporate culture and our values. And I was even scrolling Instagram this morning, before work hours, of course, and watched a video of a virtual address that Prince Harry delivered yesterday titled The Importance of Resilience. I mean, it's everywhere and everyone's feeling it and everyone's affected by, you know, the difficulties of the world, the pandemic, and everything that's going on right now. Michael, how do you define resiliency as it relates to communities and cities?
Well, resiliency is the new normal. You know, it's a term that has been bandied about now for a number of years. The Rockefeller Foundation, with its 100 Resilient City Initiative, really helped to chart a path forward with the term. And it started as a proxy for how cities can become more resilient to the shocks and stresses associated with climate change and other environmental issues. But over time, we started to see that definition evolve to really mean how can a community, principally a city, but a community in general, be more resilient to sudden changes. Environmental changes are one such sort of change, but as COVID-19 is exposed, so are public health challenges. And as the civil unrest in the wake of George Floyd's murder has shown us, so too is civil unrest. So cities that are able to deal with any sort of crisis, environmental, public health, civic, terrorist, or public safety as well, those are resilient communities.
Okay, MA, we're going to do something a little different because we've played regular rapid fire. We've played quarantine rapid fire. We're going to do something a bit different today, and it's going to seem a little maybe less fun, but very important. And we're going to do it early in the episode because I think it will outline and highlight a lot of the key points in our conversation. And I mean, you are our resiliency guy at Rubicon, so you can do this. COVID-19 has been unlike anything we could have ever imagined and has touched every facet of everyone's life. And there's obviously a ton of work to do once, you know, the pandemic strikes. But what about on the front end? What about being prepared for this? What about having the foresight to see, you know, what we can do before the actual pandemic hit? So the U.S. Global Exchange Research Program outlined 5 steps to adopting resiliency. And I'm pulling these steps from an op-ed that you wrote. And I'm going to name them. And I just want you to give me a sentence or two to describe your interpretation or your definition of the step, how you think a city can adopt a resiliency program. You ready?
I think so. Let's go.
So the first thing they say is exploring hazards. So what does that mean?
Well, just think of your home for a moment. If you move into a new home or you have a baby on the way, as I know you do, Amy, something do naturally is you go through your home and you look for those things that could pose a danger to your child or maybe a visitor of some sort, and you change things, right? So you might put locks on drawers. You might make sure that windows in an apartment building have safety guards. So similarly, that's what cities need to do. They need to go through the various communities that make them up and see where do they have vulnerabilities. And this could be vulnerabilities related to things like from, say, a rising sea level. Do they need a seawall or poor drainage? Do they need some sort of re-engineered stormwater system? But in the context of public health and COVID-19, it could mean, and it does mean, are you equipped to run a city, a whole city, from your living room or your bedroom remotely, not from City Hall, not from a truck yard? So for us at Rubicon, you know, what has that meant? That has meant, how can we help a city enable remote sanitation operations and public health operations related to sanitation and cleanliness?
You know, I do think it's important, you know, and we'll take a break there and then go back to the other steps. I do think it's important to talk about remote work during this time. Like, Rubicon has been working remotely since March, and speaking for at least my friend group alone, I was by far the first one in my circle to transition to remote during the pandemic. And obviously everyone ended up following suit. You know, for a company with employees scattered all over the country, in my opinion, and I don't know what happened behind the scenes, you know, it seemed like a relatively seamless transition for us. And everyone was able to pick up pretty quickly. But, you know, give me a little bit more detail. How can a structure like a city government continue to provide an essential service when people are working from home? You know, how do you think technology plays a role in helping people shelter in place and social distance, but still make a city run?
Well, I think, you know, COVID-19 has exposed in a positive way that we as a society are perhaps far more resilient than we thought we were, and far more, certainly far more adaptable. And I appreciate you highlighting the Rubicon example, right? We transitioned to a remote work environment. And I would agree with you. It was rather seamless after a few weeks of growing pains and trying to understand what it means to run a multi-million dollar, billion dollar company from your living room. So for a city, what does that mean? It means, how do you dispatch trucks? How do you respond to incoming complaints or concerns from citizens? How do you ensure that your public workers, particularly your frontline workers, are safe while there's a virus raging on the streets, particularly frontline workers like sanitation workers who are interacting with potentially contaminated material? And this is where technology, our technology certainly, but technology in general, plays such an important role. So, you know, Rubicon Smart Cities technology is enabling our partners, and we're in over 50 cities at this point, dispatch vehicles, reroute vehicles, swap drivers in and out of various routes, especially if, God forbid, a driver comes down with an illness, COVID or otherwise, and also track progress. And this is an important part of remote work. I think as we went into the remote work normal as a country, there was an assumption, certainly for many managers and leaders, that their workers in the private and public sectors would somehow be less efficient. They would check out at various times. They wouldn't really be dialed in during working hours. And the data show quite the opposite. People are more efficient now and accomplishing so much more working from home. And obviously there's, you know, no commute time. There are fewer distractions. Certainly childcare is something everyone needs to balance. But we're enabling cities to run their operations at the curb, picking up the trash, disposing of the recycling, and most importantly, to chart progress and ensure that even as they work remotely, they continue to improve their customer service versus just get the job done as best they can. And that's where data and analytics that come to light through having technology versus paper-based products really shine.
Talking about data kind of sets us right into our next step for how a city can adopt a resiliency program, and that's assessing the vulnerability and the risks. How do you think, what's your interpretation of how a city assesses vulnerability and risk?
Well, one very important thing to look at is equity. So far too often, and it's not necessarily someone's fault, but the noisiest citizens perhaps get more attention than those that are more complacent or less vocal. one of the biggest risks that every city has is inequality in terms of public service delivery. So baseline thing that all cities need to do is ensure that they are providing equitable public services across all zip codes and all neighborhoods. And that's really an important first step to determine, are you doing the same things for all people? A second kind of major risk bucket is, are you as a city still paper-based? Are you entirely paper-based, partially paper-based, or hopefully transitioning out of being paper-based, or maybe in a few examples, already digital? It is an enormous risk, but it's one that is easy to set aside for a future date until a crisis hits, until a shock hits you. And that's where resiliency really comes to the fore. Cities that have technology deployed, cities that are already using data to analyze their operations and to drive their public policy and operational decision making, those are resilient ones. Cities that need to get wired and then start to collect data and then start to put that into their public policy and operational decision process, those cities are going to be behind the eight ball. And what we're seeing is, and this is a green shoot, many American cities right now in the face of this health pandemic and civil unrest are saying this is the moment to invest in technology. We're not going to close the door and hope for the best during tough economic times. In fact, we're going to invest now, start saving money now, so that we're ready throughout the balance of this crisis and for whatever the next one might be.
And that really, I mean, that's kind of hits on number three too, which is investigate options, right? The digital option, the tech option. It seems to be that that step is more geared towards communities and cities that may not already be adopting that, like you said, like if they are still running, you know, a paper program or something like that. Number four is prioritizing and planning. And this is something that I think you can speak to better than anybody because you're the man with the plan, as far as I'm concerned. You know, whenever we have something going on at work and an issue or something, you know, we can always rely on you to help us come up with the plan. So I'm curious, for prioritizing and planning for cities adopting a resiliency program, what do you think that should look like? And I'm not just, you know, blowing smoke up your tush.
It is always about trade-offs, right? So when you're prioritizing anything, you're doing it at the expense of something else, unless you have limitless resources. So we have to be honest about the fact that no city, no community in the world has limitless resources, and that at all times we are, when we prioritize, we're deciding what is the urgent and what is the necessary and what is the nice to have. And I'd say that as city planners trying to come up with a resiliency strategy, you need baseline things to be done first. First, you have to ensure that you're delivering your public service equitably. Second, you have to ensure that you are fortifying your communities, whether that's physically with new structures or through more of a societal way in terms of community programs. That work has to be done universally. You can't favor one zip code over another. Once you establish that baseline, I'd say, you know, the next major thing to chart a good resilience project is to be guided by science, to be guided by public input, and to be guided by what you can afford, and to make investments that have a clear ROI and a proven ROI. So building a resilience strategy is a time when you should consider, how do I invest a dollar today to save $3 tomorrow? Why do I need to save those $3 for tomorrow? Because I don't know what's going to come next. And I want to make sure that I'm able to invest in the fabric of the community, the physical infrastructure of a community, and if possible, maybe even return some of that money to the taxpayer to keep our economy strong. And again, this is where technology really is in a leading position to help cities develop real resilience strategies. Technology can take an idea, such as the efficiency of moving vehicles or the ability to quickly and expeditiously pick up the waste, and it can spread it instantaneously across an entire fleet, when you talk about behavior change and trying to change the way citizens interact with a city, all for the sake of making that city more resilient and prepared, technology can get messages to citizens and feedback back from citizens in real time. So technology is the key, and technology that gathers and helps individuals analyze data means that decisions that cities make, not just today, but into the future, will be guided by fact and not by the whims of politics or by the latest shiny object that might be coming to the market.
And that takes us right to number five, which is take action. You know, how do you think, what are some of the ways that you've seen the cities that maybe we work with or, you know, in the news or anything, what are some of the ways that you think people are taking action and adopting this stuff quickly before it's too late for the city? Because if you don't have a resiliency program, you may not recover.
Well, you know, we see a lot of cities right now, and they're very varying sizes, you know, top 25 U.S. cities down to smaller municipalities that are now proactively coming to us and saying, we want to use our funds today to get a digital solution, a software solution up and running for our public works departments and for our government operations. So taking action, I mean, those are courageous bureaucrats and courageous government officials who are resisting the temptation to take reactive action, which is cutting it and sticking their head in the sand because they anticipate fewer tax dollars flowing in. Those are individuals who are saying, of course, we're going to have fewer tax dollars flowing in. Of course, you know, there isn't a bailout coming for our town. So they're saying, how can we help ourselves now? And they're taking a longer term look at their city. You know, cities exist for hundreds, if not thousands of years. So the best policymakers make decisions that have long term impact. And so taking action can be as simple as launching a pilot with a company like ours. It could be as simple as making some smart city investments that allow for greater connectivity between your population. It could be as simple as getting a credible 311 or text-based system up and running to allow for communication to and from government and citizens. There are many things that cities could do that range in cost, but the most important thing is to act quickly and to resist the temptation to stop innovating during a time like this. This is exactly the time when the best cities and the most resilient cities are not just making plans, but they're putting those plans into action and starting to reap the benefits of.
You wrote an op-ed and I saw a draft of it, and a line particularly stuck with me, and I just want to read it for no other reason other than I think it's important for everyone to hear it. You wrote, COVID-19 has revealed not only how vulnerable we are to a global pandemic, but how resilient we must become to not only overcome this crisis, but others, perhaps even more severe, in the future. This is the part that I love. What has become clear is that now is a watershed moment to embrace new technologies for maintaining critical infrastructure and services. And I think, you know, like you said, this is the tip of the iceberg. This is a watershed moment for everybody to not just end up surviving, but hopefully will end up thriving. So, Michael, thank you so much for coming on here and talking with us about a topic that is really important in our community right now. And you are the resiliency leader within the virtual walls of Rubicon. So, you know, we look forward to your leadership and everything that we can do to help our cities and our government. So thank you for coming on.
Absolutely, Amy. It was such a pleasure, as always. Thank you so much.